The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
And this is the Pat Kenny Show coming to you live from the Shelburne Hotel on St. Stephen's Green in Dublin. Well, now, it's Dublin, it's 2014, and on the surface, a familiar story. A 20-year-old student gets up to go about his day. However, once he leaves, he's never seen again. Throw in an elite college, an ailing mother, and big pharma skullduggery, and you've got a whole host of questions and answers waiting to be unravelled. To find out more, well, you'll have to read Jo Spain's newest thriller, The Trial, but she's going to give us a teaser as to what it's all about, because she's with us here in the Shelburne. Jo, good morning and welcome.
Thank you for having me in, Pat.
Now, I've been reading the book, and as usual, I don't read it all the way through in case I inadvertently do a spoiler on you, which I don't want to do. It's a great book, though. I've got to a particular point, having explained during the commercial break, where I'm at. And it kind of took me by surprise. That's your plan.
I'm really happy you're enjoying it, because I was sitting here listening to the general manager thinking, 13 books, countless TV shows, why didn't I put this one in the Shelburne? I will in the future. Yeah, this one is very twisty. But I was paranoid when I was writing it, like all authors are. When I conceived it in my head, I thought this would be brilliant. Then when it was written, I thought this is the worst thing I've ever written. Everyone will know what the plot is. Everyone will guess the twist. But apparently, like you just said, they're halfway through getting a bit of a shock and at the end, completely shocked.
Now, we jump forward and back. We jump from 2014 to 2024 and back again and forward again. And the central character is at the heart of both. But set the scene for us, because this happens in the early chapters of the book, where she is in 2014.
So Danny is a young student in a completely fictional college that I made.
It's kind of a mixture of Trinity and Maynooth.
Yeah, I went to Trinity and my daughter's in Maynooth, but because there's pharmaceutical corruption, I didn't use a real college.
I'm sure Luke O'Neill would be very disappointed if there was any suggestion of pharma going wrong in Trinity College. Anyway,
exactly.
There's a big pharma element.
So, I mean, I think it's something we're all very aware of. There's corruption within pharmaceutical. Anywhere where there's that much money, there's going to be corruption and greed, even if they do wonderful things for the world, which we all know of. And I guess I thought, if I'm going to write this corruption, what drug would bother me the most if I found out that this was an alleged cure, but actually there was kind of skullduggery afoot? And both of my grandmothers had Alzheimer's. And I guess it's one of those diseases where we're all very familiar with cancer and things like this. Alzheimer's seems to be something that people just accept. And I think it might be because it generally is elderly people who are affected. But when you live with it, and I've seen both of my beautiful, classy, stylish grandmothers deteriorate in front of my eyes, they're there, but they're gone. And it affects them awfully, but it really affects the families too. And I guess if that had been presented to me as a miracle drug and then it was pulled from under me, I got really emotional thinking.
I mean, the only drugs they have at the moment for Alzheimer's are those which delay the progression of Alzheimer's. And we know from talking to Luke O'Neill that in universities all over the world, the race is on to try to find a cure for the plaque that accumulates in the brain. And if that could be eliminated, at the early stage so that people retain their faculties, it would be fantastic for humanity, but what an earner it would be for pharma.
Exactly. And I mean, I went in a rabbit hole. I practically had a PhD in Alzheimer's by the time I was finished researching. But it would be huge money and, of course, would start in the States. And as we know, they tend to market the drugs very expensively then. So I guess the thing with this book was to keep it as a thriller, but set it in that world that is kind of high stakes, high money. And an awful lot of people have a lot to lose if things go wrong, so the police are up against it.
Now, let's talk about the two young people in 2014. One of them, the male who disappears, is French. I think his name, Theo, I suppose she would have said, given he was French, and her name is Danny.
Yeah. So Danny and Theo fall madly in love, even though they're 20 years of age. And I think they're kind of like that couple you were talking about earlier. They've been married for 65 years, except he leaves one night and disappears. And she's the only one who believes something has happened to him. Everybody else is saying he's a young man. He was under pressure, promised a medical student, and it just got too much for him. And then, it's written off as a tragedy. But she can't let it go.
She's afraid he's dead.
She's afraid
harm has befallen him, whereas everything suggests that he's just said, to hell with this course in this fictitious college, I'm off.
Yes, and the fact that the love of his life is saying, he wouldn't just do this to me. Everybody around her, the police, his family, are saying,
you must be joking, you're a young one.
You're a young one.
Eat it. Yes. That kind of thing.
Exactly. And she ends up in 2014 having to kind of let it go, having to accept that this tragedy just happened in her life and move on. But when she comes back to the college 10 years later as a history professor, she doesn't tell anyone about this kind of tragic secret that she has, but she sets about investigating that while realising that this stuff at the pharmaceutical company is going on at the college at the same time.
So she's a lecturer at this point, whereas she'd been a student 10 years earlier. That business of writing it, jumping back and forth in time, is that a device just to give pace, or is it a deliberate contrivance so that we unfold Danny's early story as kind of serially rather than instantly? So you don't have to lay out her early life and then move on.
Yeah, it's the script writer in me. We're show, don't tell. So I don't want to just kind of have a lot of exposition and say, this happened 10 years ago. We live it with her as the reader, and then presumably when I bring it to TV as a viewer. And then we feel it more because we're feeling her desperation when she can't find this man she's madly in love with.
Now, when you're writing a book, I'm sure you try to imagine how the reader is perceiving it as they read. And do you want to unsettle the reader a bit to get the reader doing their own detective work, trying to figure it out?
Yeah, well, I'm generally killing people, so I hope I unsettle them. Otherwise, they're kind of psychotic reading it. But I want to tug at their heartstrings when they read. I want them asking questions at the end of every chapter so they turn a page. I want them feeling emotion when I've written emotion, and then laughing when I put a little bit of black humour in as well. And I know if I'm feeling those things when I'm writing it, the readers are feeling it too.
Yeah. And do you feel insecure about every book you write?
Oh, God. The day I feel secure is probably the day that book will just bomb.
And has it ever happened the other way, where you think this is a cracker, you send it into your editor and the editor says, oh, my God, how did you produce this drivel?
No, not with books. With scripts all the time, because producers are always better writers than any writer that they hire. But with novels, no, I think sometimes I'm worried about an idea and the editor will say, that's a great idea, it's a good plot. And then when I execute it, it's not always perfect. That's the point of editors. But by the time it's finished, generally, I want to go to the shops and buy them all so no one else can read them. That's how insecure.
That's how you feel. Now, the difference between screenwriting and writing something in a book, I mean, the director of the TV series or the movie is going to do a lot of visualization for you. So whereas in this book or any book, you'd be saying, well, the college and there is the quadrangle and there's the ivy up the walls. And you try to give us in our mind's eye what it might be like, you know, 10 seconds on screen and you have all that. So it's a different skill.
Very different. And I think when I jump between them, sometimes I catch myself out because sometimes I'm writing a chapter and I'll just say, and they're in the college. And then realise, oh, it's up to me to describe the college. It's not the art department or the locations manager. And then my scripts are generally first draft over long because I'm describing everything and it's completely unnecessary. So you have to completely reset your mind.
Yeah, but that script is also giving the location scouters an idea of what kind of building you're looking for, what kind of setting.
Exactly. I think scripts maybe are more action dialogue driven, whereas books, I know when I read a book, I want to sink into the description of the place. I want to be taken to wherever that character is.
Now, tell us about your screenwriting. What's happening in that world? Because you're incredibly busy.
My co-writer came at me today to make sure I just do this and go straight back to work. We are just in the middle of writing Harry Wilde season 4, which is our Jane Seymour show. And Harry Wilde season 3 is about to air on BBC America and worldwide. And we have a thriller on RTE later in the year that's based on a thriller novel by Karen Perry, The Boy That Never Was. And I have one that starts filming in Australia on Monday called Mixtape, which is a musical romance going to be a big one.
The role of the screenwriter, though, once you finish the job and they may even change your dialogue and so on, you have to kind of just hand it over. Are you ever disappointed by what the director and the art director and the cinematographer have done with what you consider to be a brilliant work on paper?
I think, so we showrun Harry Wilde, myself and David Logan, which means we make all the decisions right through to the very end. In collaboration with, you know, we have great directors, we have great producers, and we are there at the very end, though, signing off on the credits and the mix and everything. On other shows, I do just lock scripts and hand them in and say, don't make a mess. But I'm at the point in my career now where they can't change things without clearing it with me. So I'm in the sweet spot of control freak.
sounds very good. This book is just out, but I presume you've already probably half finished another one, have you?
No. It's the first time I've been so busy with TV, I haven't thought about the next book. This is book 13, so I kind of feel I've banged them out every year. I might take a little break, a couple of months, for the next one.
This one strikes me as made for TV as well.
Yeah.
You're nodding your head.
Yeah.
Was this half in your mind?
I think this one will be going straight to TV.
To TV. Well, it's called The Trial, and if you want to preview what might eventually end up on television, you can buy it now in all good bookshops. It's published by Quercus, and its author, Joe Spain. Joe, thank you very much for leaving your desk.
Thank you.
Coming to us. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.